What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore. We're back with Whiskey Wednesday. We got Josh in the studio, or Josh not in his studio, not in our studio. We've got Jake behind the monitor and the computer and all of our articles. I'm your host, Sean Moore, and we've got Mike Whitfield maybe joining us, maybe not. We'll see if he shows up. We are going live today, our first live show. So those of you that are used to getting Whiskey Wednesday published right out of the gate at midnight, or, you know, I guess at 12 a.m. your time, and they're coming out, you're going to have to wait till 9 a.m. Mountain Time, because we're going to go live with these Whiskey Wednesdays from now on. And so might be fun, might be not fun. We'll see how we do as far as our technical abilities. And so we thought it would be a fun thing to start going live, because we don't edit these shows anyway, so we might as well just do them live on Wednesday mornings. And so might have to change the name of Whiskey Wednesday, because whiskey at 9 a.m. is not exactly usually on the menu. And so we'll see. We might just keep it Whiskey Wednesday and just have a sip and wait for later, right? So none of us are real big drinkers. I actually love whiskey. I named it Whiskey Wednesday because I actually do like to sip on whiskey once in a while, not that often, but I love the story behind whiskeys. You know, whiskeys and the distilleries and the different places that we like usually get them. I'll kind of collect a bottle wherever I go, and it kind of spurs a memory for me. And so that's why I actually am a big whiskey guy. It's not because I actually drink that much. And I know Josh and Mike and Jake, you guys aren't huge drinkers of whiskey either. We just kind of like the story of it. So, enough of that. That's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about short-term rentals. And so on Whiskey Wednesdays, what we try to do is bring in, you know, the things that are happening in our world, real world events that are affecting our short-term rental investing journey. And that's what we're going to talk about today. We always like to give shout outs to some people that are doing an amazing job. So we've got that on the agenda. Today, we're going to be, I know we've got Josh, we're going to go to you with some states. We kind of mentioned this last week, states that are stepping over their boundaries, and or municipalities that are stepping over their boundaries and regulations, and states coming in saying, hey, listen, we might need to stop that. Some people with deep pockets that are trying to influence how some areas are operating short-term rentals. We're going to talk about Delta, Airbnb teaming up. We're going to talk about some questions about software tools, accounting tools, and so we'll dive right into it. First and foremost, on my notes, take the survey, it says. Jake's got a survey. We would love to get your guys' feedback about the podcast. We're starting to do this episode live every week, but also, so during that, you can also post in your questions, send in your questions to support@vodacy.com if you want to send them in prior to the show. We've got a few of those on the agenda today, but those of you that are longtime listeners, or maybe you're a brand new listener, what would you like us to talk more about? What would you like to hear more of? What would you like us to cut out? You know, are there certain voices or people that you don't want to hear from? And so let us know. Your feedback is very, very important. We're trying to grow this show and continue to provide value for you guys. Our ultimate goal is to help you walk into this game with your eyes wide open. And that's what we try to do with all of these topics and all these things that we're talking about, but is really to make us better investors, more informed investors. When you are investing in anything, there's an inherent risk in there. And so what we're always trying to do is mitigate the risk and accelerate our successes, maximize our success. And that's comes from a lot of these conversations and being able to talk to other investors, being able to talk to, you know, experts in the field. And so whatever you want to hear more of or less of, or just some general feedback, we'd love to have you do that. The survey is in the show notes and the bio of whatever platform you're on right now. Jake will have that either in the bio or the show notes, so you can access that survey. Takes less than 5 minutes, and very, very appreciated from our side to make sure that we continue to raise the bar and talk about things you guys want to hear about. And so first and foremost, one of the things I don't ever want to stop talking about is shout outs to investors that are doing an amazing job. We have one of our Vodacy members, Terry Newell. They launched Moon Lake Retreat in Blue Ridge, Georgia. Really fun little property right on a little lake, and did an amazing job. Went through the process of that acquisition phase, getting it set up, getting it launched, and, you know, really kind of the exciting phase now where consumers get to use it and they get to see it and they get to spend time in it, and the calendar's starting to fill up. Terry, it looks amazing. Great job with the property, and really, really excited for you rolling into the summertime season. But shout out to you guys. And again, we always say success leaves clues. These properties are always posted in the show notes, so go check these properties out. And if you're going to be in the Blue Ridge area, it might be a fun place to stay. So good job, Terry, and looking forward to that next one. So Josh, I'm going to go to you first, but we're going to talk about some states that are stepping in over county municipality rulings. States are actively testing their authority over SDRs, with some passing laws that preempt local restrictions and others debating tax and regulatory changes that directly affect hosts, platforms, property tax classification. So what are we seeing in some of these local municipalities where the states are coming in? Is it pro or against short-term rentals?
It goes both directions, depending on the state and depending on what side of the aisle.
Oh, that's weird.
That state, yeah, ironically, right? Yeah. So, you know, one thing we talk about with Vodacy, our very first fundamental is right property, right location. And the right property, right location includes knowing your rules and regulations, right? If I'm buying a 30-year amortized product, I want to make sure that I'm good to go for the foreseeable future, right? So we're seeing, you know, post-COVID regulations come sweeping in from the county, municipality, HOA level, right? I'm not anti-regulations. I'm not necessarily pro-regulations, but I do think there's a place for business to operate. There's a place for businesses not to operate. And as people are navigating this, as it keeps going up the chain, so to speak, certain states are coming in. Some of the state STR bills that have recently passed are Idaho, and that's a statewide STR preemption law. Basically, is a sweeping law limiting how cities and counties can regulate short-term rentals, requiring them to be treated the same as other residential uses, right? So you're no longer going to be, whether you want to call it discrimination or being singled out, essentially, if you're running as a long-term rental or a short-term rental, your rules and regulations are relatively the same, right? Indiana has a ban on rental caps. They enacted a law prohibiting cities and counties from capping the number of residential rental properties, a change that will prevent local governments from restricting the density of short-term rentals. I have two sides of that. I think one, it's a big win for the people that have been fighting for a little more freedom. I do think there could be some overarching long-term effects from that to where they may rein that back in down the road, just because at some point you may have, you know, too many eggs in the basket, so to speak. But we'll see how, we'll keep an eye on that.
I would throw a contrarian view on that. I do think that a lot of these areas that are putting these bans and then removing them to saying, hey, listen, we're going to restrict how many short-term rentals are out there. The marketplace is going to regulate that very well, just naturally, right? When supply goes up, and you know, one, the more supply there is, and if demand's not following that supply up, ultimately prices come down too much. All of a sudden investors are not as attracted to that area, so they start to leave. So supply starts to weed itself out. If you really look at these areas that put these short-term rental bans on it, they really are hurting the affordability for visitors and travelers to go in there, because when you have a closed market and you have no more competition coming in on the supply side, and you've got one of the licenses that are still available and nobody else can come in, well, all of a sudden it doesn't bode well for the consumer, because now the competition at the top, the supply says, we're the only game in town, so we can charge what we want, we can operate how we want, we can do all those things. So, you know, a lot of these areas that have these regulations, in my opinion, just most of the time, like, just remove them, let the market decide. The market is very unforgiving, and it will naturally regulate that supply and demand, right? Because if I get way too much supply, prices are going to come way down. When they come way down, investors don't want to be in that game. That's good for the consumer, though, right? The more options I have as a consumer, the more prices are going to be regulated. And I don't get, you know, somebody that's saying, hey, listen, you can't come in here, and I've got a ban on short-term rentals, and we've got these 100 short-term rentals that are in here. They're the only people who can operate. Now, all of a sudden, the consumer gets hurt. And many of these areas, you know, they tout themselves to be consumer advocates, like, hey, we're going to do this to help rent control, we're going to do this to help prices. They actually hurt it. And it's crazy to me that a lot of these politicians don't go to basic economic classes and understand capitalism at its very core level, because the marketplace is unforgiving, and the marketplace will regulate itself, and it will regulate itself to get better products, better prices, better for the consumer. And then when it gets to be the point where the investor themselves can't make money, they will get out and they'll go somewhere else. So supply will regulate itself as well. And so anyways, didn't mean to interrupt you, because I want you to keep going on that. Idaho, our neighboring state here, I know it's a long way from South Carolina and Texas, but Idaho's right next to us in Utah. I love what they did and just said, hey, listen, you got to treat them like every other property. If you can rent it, you can rent it.
Right. And I think, you know, it's, you know, I'm involved with my neighborhood, my primary HOA. I'm the president, right? And I'm also involved with my rentals HOA, because I make money there, right? And I want to know, be part of that. And I'm okay at the neighborhood level and the small level saying, hey, that this isn't allowed here, or this is allowed here, right? Because it affects who do you want to live there? Do you want to live there? But as that radius gets further and further out, right? Like, at what point are you overstepping on my property rights as an owner, right? And I think it's a big piece. And if you look at all the SDR bills recently that have failed, Arizona, Colorado, Maine, New Mexico, Washington State, pending bills in Hawaii, Kentucky, Minnesota, Missouri, New Hampshire, Ohio. And then one, if I have a second, John, the two to vent about it, is my home state, South Carolina. And we are a, you know, depending on what city you live in, it's red or blue, but we are a very red state. And doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on, it's the way it historically votes, right? We have an individual. He happens to own one of, if not the largest, vacation rental management companies in the whole state. And he is interested in limiting on who can host properties. And guess who it benefits? It benefits him, right? And he's spent a lot of money, and this is Elliott Rentals for HV3876. I've been pretty vocal to my constituents, to my people, the friends that I have in legislature to vote against this. Essentially, it says, I operate my own properties, this bill does not affect me, right? In any way, shape, or form, right? If you are a self-operator, doesn't affect you. If you are a big box operator that's a real estate broker, have a state PM license, it doesn't really affect you, but you have to be able to take the money and now remit your own taxes versus allowing the OTAs to do it, right? This affects co-hosts, and we think somewhere between 15,000 to 25,000 properties are going to either have to self-manage or go with companies like the guy that's paying for this bill to be passed, right? To me, it's the definition of swamp, right? Very anti this, knowing that I've stayed in these properties before. These are the bottom of the barrel properties, and I bet they are losing their margins because of the co-hosts are doing a better job. And that's the problem.
Yeah, it's again, you know, big surprise. You got, you know, lobbyists paying off politicians to benefit themselves. Weird. We've never heard that before, but it is, you know, it's one of those things that you have to be one again. Let the consumers choose the best option. Now, there are a lot of states, and I don't know this bill, so you can answer this, but there are a lot of states, if you are going to property manage for somebody else, that you have to be licensed to do so. It shouldn't be a size deal or anything like that. Now, there are co-hosting operations that are, you know, as a property owner and a co-host comes in and I can team up with a co-host, we're in this together, right? They're going to do a lot of the property management, you know, communication with my guests, everything else. Why should I be restricted on that? Now, where the licensing comes in is when you start to deal with other people's money. And so a lot of states say, hey, listen, if you're going to deal with somebody else's money and you're going to take payments, you know, on behalf of somebody else, you're going to hold it in your account, you're going to make payouts and this, you know, taxes, payouts, all that kind of stuff. Many states, and this isn't just South Carolina, I don't know if this is what the bill revolves around, but you have to be a licensed property manager, just like you have to be a licensed realtor to sell real estate, right? And so many states do that. However, they don't limit us being able to operate with a co-host with some different parameters. And that's where I think that if that's shutting that down and you really have the option to self-manage or go with one of the big box property managers, that's a massive, massive loss for South Carolina and a lot of the property owners in those areas, because now you are only, you know, I might not have the time. I don't manage my own properties. I know you manage your property, Josh. I don't manage any properties, never have, never will, but I also don't hire the big box operators because they have, like you mentioned, the bottom of the barrel properties, and they're operated at such a level that they're not going to maximize. They're not going to be at the top of the market. And so it's just a volume game. They just want the volume, right? It's like, hey, I'll just control the market. That in and of itself is something I'd be very, very against.
I mean, just knowing this specific PM and being at one of his properties before, when my sister-in-law started dating my now brother-in-law, we went to Myrtle Beach and we ended up staying in one of these properties many years ago. And he brought his own sheets. And I was like, man, that is weird that you're bringing your own sheets. He's like, yeah, we have travel sheets. When you go to this area, they don't provide linens. And sure enough, this company does not provide linens. Well, I don't want to go on vacation and bring my own linens. And that shouldn't be, you know what I mean? And I'm not saying to each their own, but we shouldn't all have to stay at a Motel 6 if we don't want to.
No. And run your business how you want to run your business. And you're right. There's a place for that. But if that's the only game in town, and all of a sudden the Motel 6 is the only game in town, so they can start charging Four Seasons pricing, that's a problem for me. Like right. that, you just hurt me as a consumer to my ability to operate in that market completely. And so it's a massive loss if they don't have the option to have those boutique managers to work with, the boutique co-host to be able to work with. And hopefully South Carolina has a lot of vacation markets, you know, Myrtle Beach being a massive one, Hilton Head another one. I mean, you've got some major markets that if this bill passes, it probably affects them very negatively. Again, without knowing all the details of it, I know it's right in your backyard, so you're a lot more up to speed on it than we are, but just my opinion would be, like we were talking about before, you close off these markets and you stop competition from coming in, whether it's from other short-term rental investors coming in, but also on the property management side. I'm only allowing these big companies that can basically fit the or check off the criteria that this bill is requiring of everybody, and it's not going to allow the boutique operators to come in. The service is going to go down for the guests that are coming in there, bringing my own sheets. I don't want to, if I'm going to Myrtle Beach and all of a sudden I have to fly from Utah, my bag's already packed. I don't want to pack sheets as well, you know, or stop at Walmart on my way to the vacation rental to pick up sheets. Right. So it just doesn't work. And so going back to the Idaho one too, is just saying, hey, listen, we're going to open this up. Before I go back to the Idaho one, you did mention something, because I am actually a fan of short-term rentals. Aren't built to be everywhere, right? Like when every real estate has different uses and that kind of highest and best uses, there are a lot of neighborhoods or HOAs that we buy into. Like, some people hate HOAs. I've always liked living in an HOA because I don't have to worry about my neighbor having a car up on blocks, you know, or the way that they take care of their grass. Like, right, there's rules inside of those HOAs. And so I think it's perfectly fine for HOAs, homeowners associations, to go and vote and say whether we want to allow short-term rentals or not. Just like they say, are we going to allow, you know, cars parked on the street? Are we going to allow, is there going to be a rule on how the landscaping looks? All of those different rules that they place, I think is perfectly fine. And they charge for that. You vote on that. When you buy a property in an HOA, you have to understand the inherent risks in that and understand, is it pro STR? Is it pro investor? Is it pro homeowner? Well, like, who's in there? And it allows you to operate. And I don't think that that's overstepping property rights necessarily. I think when you start getting states and counties, municipalities starting to decide what's best for a market, many times they just are not the right people making those decisions. I really don't like, right. I've been in real estate my whole life. I've been in a lot of city and county meetings. I've developed a lot of properties, tried to go to get zoning changes and entitlement changes. It's not to say you're not exactly dealing with the people who should be making those decisions is an understatement in most of those meetings. And so, but HOAs, different story. These are the homeowners. That's where they're living. That's the neighborhood you're buying into. Do they want to operate short-term rentals? If they say no, they say no. I have actually no problem with that, because that's why you buy into an HOA, right? You might buy into an HOA and you're like, well, I want to park my boat out front and it's my house. I'll park it wherever I want. It's like, no, you bought into an HOA and they have rules against that. You know that when you buy into it, right? And so, and I think that's perfectly fine as well.
I agree with that. I agree with that 100%.
Yeah. Mike, anything to add to that? And you're like our creative guy, our design creative guy. We're talking about the rules, regulations, but anything you want to add to that as we put a pin in it?
First and foremost, I hope I sound okay. I had a little bit of a technical difficulty with all of my equipment this morning.
You're good. For the live, we started without you. I did the introduction without you. I said, I don't know if Mike's showing up or not. We're going to see. We're going live. And sure enough, we got you here, buddy.
Yeah. Here, working off the laptop. But, you know, a big thing I would say from a design perspective when it comes to this, just like you mentioned, parking a boat in the front yard, is a lot of people request signage in the front of their house. Like, they, you know, we design all these really cool graphics for their house logos and what we call like album covers that are thematic signage pieces that we use all through the house and make coasters and all kinds of stuff like that. And we get regular requests to put those out on mailboxes or to put them up on front yards. And I'm always having to tell people, before we do that, you need to check with of that neighborhood, because we have had several times where a house maybe snuck in, right? And it's not that it was against the covenants, but it yeah. creates a pitchfork riot by the neighbors when they realize that you're an STR, even though the covenants don't prevent it or the HOA doesn't prevent it, nobody wants it. And then all of a sudden you come in, all the neighbors realize you're an STR and they literally make your life a living hell because you didn't do the due diligence to make sure that it was an STR friendly area. Or if you don't care, which many people don't, you got to make sure that you a little bit fly under the radar in the neighborhood, knowing that, you know, we tend to deal with clients that are a little more of a higher echelon of STR consumers intentionally, so that we're dealing with higher echelon clients that come with more respect and less chaos, right? But if you're dropping right in the middle of a neighborhood, I would say just be cautious of how much exterior graphic, exterior thing, calling it out. This is an STR or a destination.
Yeah, I totally like agree. That. And it's, you know, some areas are much different than others. You go down to, you know, you go down to Destin, you go in the Smokies, or you go, you know, down to Blue Ridge. Everybody's an STR. It's not that big of a deal. Like your neighbor is probably an STR as well. You start, you know, plopping down in the middle of residential areas, even though you may be able, you know, rules, regulations, CCNRs all allow it. If your neighbors don't like it, we've had many of our members who they were legally and, you know, everything was in line. They could get the permits. They were allowed to. Their neighbors didn't like it. And they literally made it, just like you said, Mike, a living hell for them as an investor, but also for their guests. They went out of their way to make the guest experience less than ideal. And
every night someone's out on the backpack. O'clock, you know, it's good to know what you're getting into. Know your neighbor, scared of it, because if this needs to be part of the acquisition phase of your due diligence investigation, because I find that in my experience over the years and years and years of doing this, if your investigation reveals that your neighbor is angry, I would say 8 out of 10 times they don't suddenly decide to like you and like that. This
part of when we're in the inspection period, if we go under contract, we actually reach out to the neighbors, let them know who we are, what we're doing. Hey, listen, this is going to be, you know, we don't want parties here. We don't want bad people here any more than you do. Like we actually don't try to fly under the radar, because eventually they're going to find you out. I actually want to know that before I actually close on the property. I want to know how the owners or my neighbors are going to be and how well they receive me when I go and introduce myself in the very beginning. Okay. So awesome. Yeah. Let's move on. Mike, take your, you might need, you're breaking up really bad. I don't know if it's the earphones. Maybe we can just go right off the laptop. Your earbuds might be, when you're talking, it's cutting out a lot.
Is that a little better?
Okay. Awesome. So, next topic, we've got kind of adding to that is this will be just short. We don't need to add it to it because we actually talked about this a couple weeks ago, but LA's mayor is proposing a temporary program letting second homes and investment properties operate as short-term rentals through December 31st, 2028, because of the Olympics. The Olympics run July 14th, July 30th. With the Paralympics following from August 15th to the 27th. So the planning department originally rejected allowing short-term rentals coming in. And then they looked at it and said, listen, we've got a lot of people coming here and nowhere to house them. And so now all of a sudden we need it. Big surprise that LA just kind of flip-flops on whatever's in front of them. Very interesting, since this is the mayor doing this, kind of a national mayoral race that we're all watching from the sidelines, because it's fairly entertaining. And so it is, we'll see what happens in LA, but you know, again, these big cities who they stopped, you know, short-term rentals because it was the affordable housing, wasn't there. And this was going to solve all the problems. Big surprise. It didn't. New York, Seattle, LA, Still some of the most expensive places to rent a property, even though short-term rentals aren't allowed. And so they weren't the actual problem. There might be other problems that we need to look at, but just maybe just a note to some of you cities to look at some of the other issues that you've got going on. But it looks like they might roll that back for some of you that are in those areas for the big events coming in. But that's in 2028. I don't know if they're rolling them out right now. I don't think so. Jake, it didn't look like, right? So, next, Delta and Airbnb team up. So Delta and Airbnb have expanded their partnership. So Delta SkyMiles members can now earn miles not just on Airbnb stays, but also on qualifying Airbnb experiences and services worldwide. Earnings are $1 per $1 spent on Airbnb homes and 3 miles per $1 qualifying experience and services. Interesting. They're actually giving you a bonus for experience and services outside the stays. So one of the questions, does this help fix STRs that are not drive to destinations? Some of those things, I don't think this does a whole lot for demand or anything else. This is very much just a strategic partnership. We see this stuff all the time. Companies that are in similar industries, but non-competitive, they will team up and allow points to cross over. I don't read much more into that. Delta's been doing this. Delta's very actually big on this. Like, they teamed up with Lyft for a while. I think they've switched over to Uber now. So they're doing Airbnb. Maybe in a couple of years, it's going to be Vrbo. Who knows? But they've got a lot of partnerships with rental car companies, with the rideshare companies. Now we're doing it with Airbnb. This is just one of those partnerships that are strategic for, similar hospitality type companies. I don't think it really spurs a lot of extra business to some of those fly to destinations. But I think it's a nice perk, and it's just trying to build that customer loyalty and saying, hey, listen, if you stick with us, you can build the miles program and the points on Airbnb. And so that's a good thing. So any takes on that, Josh?
I'm a big points guy, man, but I'm at an American Airlines hub. So, my city car is all about the American Airlines points. And I mean,
So American will be with VRBO soon.
Yeah. I will say, if I'm going to a gas station and I know a specific gas station offers, double points compared to the other gas station, I'll go pay an extra couple pennies over there. Right. And is that petty of a reason? But it's not going to move the needle. Say I'm going to drive another 20 miles to go do it. It's not going to move the needle for me.
Yeah. It's funny how our consumer behavior is. Like, we really do. We've got a gas station out here out west called Maverick, and it's you get points, and your points go in, and they always give these cool Jeeps or trucks away at the end of the day. It's kind of an outdoorsy type of a gas station. That's who their target audience is, like outdoors people. And so it's always about adventure and all this stuff. And I always go to a Maverick just so I can get the points to get in the drawing. Like, you don't get to use the points for anything, but I am a big Delta points guy, American Express points guy. And so, it does bode some loyalty. You get those points stacking up and you can use them for certain things. And so,
I have one of the guys that works for me, for whatever reason, his business gives me triple points. So I'm like, I'm going to pay you through credit card. Right. Because yeah. I mean, I was like, it's a no brainer to pay you for that, man. I don't know why. I don't know what he entered when he entered his business information, but I accept it. So he's always getting paid on credit by credit card for me. So,
yeah. Mike, you love points. I mean, so points are just, they're strategic alignments with these brands. But, points are, we use points every day, right?
Every day. I mean, listen, to say that collecting points or status, right? It won't surprise me if there's some type of Airbnb or VRBO status, like on the hosting side, you have that, right? But what happens when now you're a super guest, and you're unlocking something? It's like status is even less valuable than points. That's all playing to the shopper's pride. But we spend money for that too, just to walk on with a tag on our bag, and get a nicer seat. It's really wild how we behave. But I think it, like I think Josh said, I don't think it's going to destroy the needle, but it might twinge it a little.
Yeah. Yep. I think it's just a big announcement, just kind of strategic partnership. We'll watch that. I'm glad they didn't partner. Airbnb chose Delta over Spirit, but that was a better bet. So
they'll be like booking.com will choose like JetBlue or something. Right.
Yeah. Right.
That's right.
Yeah. We should not be so judgmental about certain brands. Right. But we are. So there you go. The questions. couple questions. I got a question for both of you. Also, we had a really good question come in on our AMA call yesterday from Jesse that I wanted to kind of repeat. Is Jesse had a couple questions about dealing with a property manager and kind of expectations. One of the questions was, should we as a host or a property manager, should they answer all reviews? So property manager wasn't really answering all the reviews. And that seems like such a obvious no-brainer that your property manager should do that, and that absolutely every single guest review should be answered. And if you are hosting your own property, self-managing, and or you're a property, a co-host, maybe you're a property manager listening to this, please don't be one of those property managers or hosts that don't answer every single review that comes in. We live by those reviews. We're very much judged by those reviews. We ask our guests to leave us a review. At the very minimum, thank them for staying and respond to every single one of the reviews. It always shocks me when I see listings and you go to all the reviews and you see how many of them don't get responded to. That is such a, to me, that is amateur hour in my opinion. That just shows me that you're a host that is, you know, take the time and respond to somebody's review when they leave you one, right? And so one, like when he asked that, I actually thought, you know, we haven't talked about this too often on the show. We haven't talked about it very often, you know, outside of some of these things that were, you know, the platforms we're on. And we probably should, because I actually started looking at a lot of properties yesterday when that question came in, because to me that just is a no-brainer. Like, yes, we do that, right? I started looking at a lot of properties, and a lot of properties don't have a lot of reviews coming in that are or the reviews that are coming in are not getting responded to. So if you're self-managing, if you're property managing, please respond to those reviews. Second question was, are same day check-ins and check-outs common? And should our property manager be able to handle that? And the answer to that was absolutely yes. In 85-90% of the cases, your property manager should be able to handle same day check-in and check-outs. You'll have way too many orphan days on the calendar. You'll leave way too much money on the table if they can't handle same day check-in and check-out, especially during your peak season. And so with rare exceptions, one, if you own a big property and you're a property manager, one of the questions we ask them before we hire them is, where do they do laundry? Is it on-site or off-site? Many of your bigger property managers and even your co-hosts, they want to do the laundry off-site because it's easier for them. They can show up, they can take all the dirty linens, they can throw it in a bag, they can, you know, show up with their clean linens because you got two or three sets and put them all on. They take them and do the laundry off-site. That's very easy to do a same-day turn when that's the case. If they're doing property on site, now I need to make sure that they're set up and put in a position to be able to actually clean all the linens and get them all, you know, all of them, you know, laundered and everything and dried and put away. Maybe I don't have to use those same linens and put them back on the beds. Most of the time you still have two or three sets of linens. So they show up, they take all the dirty ones, they start the laundry, they start cleaning the house, they put the new linens on the beds and get them all ready to go. But they have to be able to get them washed and dried and put back in the closet before they leave. On a very, very large property, let's say you have a 5 or 6 bedroom property and you only have one set of washer and dryer. That's a problem, right? It's going to be very hard for them to turn that. What if you have a pool and all of a sudden you have 15 towels to clean as well and, you know, wash and dry? Ultimately, in the amount of time you have to turn, which is maybe a 4-hour period, you're not going to be able to turn that same day if you're doing all that on site. So if that's the case, invest in double washers and dryers. Invest in the equipment that you need to be able to turn that over. Jesse's property was in a more remote area. And so, you know, you have to say, I think the excuse is, hey, listen, this is a little bit more remote. How are we going to do this? But it's a smaller property, has the tools to be able to do the laundry on site. So they might not have to take it off site, but regardless, those areas, even if you're in more of a remote area or a mountain area, it's still an area that is serviced, right? It's still an area that has a lot of services. There's people coming in, you have a property manager there, they should be able to do same day check-ins, check-outs, and you need to be able to navigate that. Otherwise, you're going to leave a lot of money on the table, because yeah, those orphan days are going to add up, and it's going to be a significant portion of your revenue, especially during the peak season. So yeah, I wanted to hit that one. Go ahead, Josh.
Yeah. One thing with that, I mean, it's a mathematics game. Okay. When you underwrite this property and you say, I'm going to rent full time 365 days a year, and I'm going to have 40 guests a year. Okay. Just say 40 just for easy math. Okay. If I can't do an SDT or same day turn, I only have 325 days of availability. And depending on when that previous guest checks out, if they check out on a Friday and I can't now get another guest in until Saturday, I'm probably going to lose that weekend. And that's my moneymaker right there. When we look at what we do with Invodacy, 9-step guided program, right? We know what comes before underwriting is your partners, your manager partner, your cleaning team, your HVAC team. We look at that before we do the underwriting to say, hey, do I have the infrastructure in that market to be able for me to be successful? Otherwise, it's going to affect how I have to underwrite these deals.
100%. Yep, absolutely. So I'm gonna stay with you, Josh, on this one too. Somebody sent in a question, wanted to ask what kind of accounting software you'd recommend for a small STR business with 4 properties.
Well, I mean, I think we joked about it earlier, you know, an abacus and a pen and paper is great, but reality, man, QuickBooks is kind of the international go-to. There's other options out there. Don't look at the price. My question is, what does your accountant want you to do? What does your bookkeeper want you to do? That is the answer I want, right? If you don't have a system in place now, what makes that relationship easier? What is something easier to integrate in the long term for that? We use QuickBooks. It's simple to set up, do the work on the front end, and it makes it really easy on the back end. I'm sure there's better prices and better other gadgets and stuff, but in general, it's accounting, it's numbers. What does your CPA want you to do? What's easiest for them? And I'm probably going to go with what they say because I'm trusting them to help me out with my financials.
Yeah, absolutely. There's not really a lot. There's not a fancy STR accounting software that we use. You know, pretty much across the board, I would say 90% of our Vodacy family is using QuickBooks because that is also very preferable for a lot of CPAs. But exactly what Josh said, it's really not a question for us to ask as much as it is a question for you to ask your bookkeeper CPA, how they like to see the numbers, how they want it, how do they want it? How do they want to access it all so they can, you know, do accurate accounting on the back end for you. So we use QuickBooks. Lots of people use QuickBooks, but ask your CPA and accountant as well. And your bookkeeper. Okay, Mike, we have somebody that sent in a question, one of our Vodacy members, because nobody else would see this, is have a question when looking at your cost options. It appears that you have 3 options, a 3-star mid-scale, 4-star upscale, and 5-star luxury. Is the assumption that using cost option 1, which would be 3-star mid-scale, mean the STR will perform at the top of the market only for mid-scale properties shown on AirDNA, or can a cost option of a 3-star mid-scale perform as well or better than the upscale or luxury properties shown in AirDNA that are not Vodacy signature properties? Just trying to figure it out. If I want to do my best to be the top 1% in the market, then is it a requirement to budget above cost option number 1, which is mid-scale?
That's a phenomenal question, actually. So the way that we're looking at numbers from the perspective of how we're presenting them to Vodacy members especially, is we're looking at them as what we need to spend to guarantee you. And I guarantee is a strong word.
Yeah, don't be careful not to get us in trouble with guarantees here. We're in the investment guarantee space.
Guarantee is a strong word. I'm referencing that word based on years and years of empirical data that shows that if you follow the yellow brick road, you get to Oz. Okay. Now, just doing the right design without the right photography doesn't get you there. Doing the right design and the right photography with the wrong marketing and doesn't get you there. The right design, marketing, and photography with the wrong property manager. So there's legs to the stool that achieve the full success, and it's all comprehensively covered in the Vodacy algorithm. But when it comes to 3-star mid-scale, 4-star upscale, 5-star luxury, what we're referring to is the guest expectation relative to the price that they're paying for their A&R, their average nightly rate to stay there. If I go and pay a Waldorf Astoria price for a Motel 6, my correlation between what I'm paying to what I'm receiving does not equal itself, right? Inversely, I shouldn't expect to get the Waldorf Astoria for $39.95 a night, right? Because now I'm asking for more than what I'm willing to pay for an average nightly rate. So when we're looking at those numbers, mm-hmm. we're basing this off of years of empirical data, literally over 1,000 installations and designs, which as anyone who studies statistics know, you just need 31 random subject matters for a population sample. And we've got hundreds into thousands. What we're looking at is a 3-star mid-scale at that budget with our signature design is going to put you at the top of the market for a 3-star mid-scale, almost guaranteed. It's like fish in a barrel. It's so easy because in following those steps, you stand out amongst the crowd so much. As we've talked about in previous episodes, you're not competing on price anymore. You're competing on experience. That leads into the second half of that question, which was, can I compete with a 4-star upscale property or even a luxury property as a mid-scale property? Okay. So yes, is the answer. Utilizing this methodology of design and execution, you're creating a class of your own. The unfair advantage that you're constantly talking about that gives you the unfair share of business. You'll own your class. When I talk to people that say, you know, can I do this? Will I be successful? I always stick to the lane of I am 100%. I believe with all my heart that you will be at the top of the market for your class of property. Yeah. That is the box that I am here to check, is making sure that what you bought and what you've penciled on your spreadsheets and what you're charging is going to yield the outcomes you need to be successful. But I am also confident that with the execution of our algorithm, you will be taking people that might have spent a little more for an upscale property, and they'll actually spend just a touch less with you, but your price point is at the way high end of the mid-scale marketplace that everyone else is clamoring for the bottom and you're way at the top. But to that guy that's going up a tier, he goes, wow, I have to spend $400 or $500 or $600 more $100 a night to get this house. But if I do this one, I actually spend less, but it looks cooler than this one. I'm confused. And as Josh will tell you, and as you know, Josh, Sean, this is all about now actively adjusting that price point up until you hit that plateau of occupancy that you desire that doesn't destroy your house. I'm not a fan of 100% occupancy or 90% occupancy. That's degrading to your house. I like a nice smooth 65 at the maximum amount of money I can charge, giving me 35% of the year to keep it maintained and to make all of the items that I purchased last longer. And that actually has more value on a mid-scale property where you're putting in lower end pieces than it does on an upscale or luxury property where you're putting in solid wood, metal, leathers, things that are literally commercial grade that can actually hold up to it. When you're in a mid-scale property, you want to be at the highest end of that market, charging the highest amount you can charge, having a little bit of a lower occupancy to make your wares last longer. So it's a complex question with a complex answer. But if I were to now, after saying all that, just put it in the Reader's Digest, it's following the Vodacy design algorithm at a mid-scale will put you at the top of the mid-scale market, but you will also be piquing the interest of the upscale market. But to them, it'll be a discount, massive value. And to the mid-scale person, it'll be, am I willing to pay more for this experience than everyone else because it looks like more, which will weed you down to that 65% or bring in the mid-scale people thinking they're getting a deal buying from you there. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And one thing that's confusing for those people that are listening in that are not part of the Vodacy family, we're talking about the design, like, okay, here's our budgets, right? Mid-scale, upscale, luxury. We also look at that on the underwriting side with like AirDNA, and they have, you know, mid-scale, upscale, luxury properties, and they're not, their classification is all about revenue, like who's charging X amount of money, right? And so usually in your market, that is dictated by your proximity. to stuff, right? Most of the time, these properties are all set up like model. They're going to be the model homes that are in the good proximity. You know, the better proximities are going to be in the luxury side. The you know, tier down, a couple rows off the beach, are going to be in the upscale side. If you get, you know, maybe you're on a golf course and not close to the beach, maybe you're in the mid-scale in a beach market, right? So their classifications are different than our classifications. But what Mike is saying is, if I have a mid-scale budget, I'm going to stand out in that group, right? And so if I'm saying I'm going to compete with the other mid-scale properties, the nice thing about luxury, upscale, mid-scale properties, they all come with different price points and buy-ins, right? They're all different acquisition prices. And so to be on the beach is going to be a lot more expensive than be a few rows off the beach. And so I can actually go buy an upscale property. Maybe I'm a couple rows off the beach, do the certain design. Maybe I just do that upscale design and I'm going to jump a price tier in that market, right? And say, okay, now I can actually compete. I'm not on the beach. I'm a couple rows off the beach, but I have much better property. And so,
Sean, we have numbers of Vodacy properties that are what we would call B level. We've even done some C level properties that we take up to B plus or A minus, right? But these B properties that go to A properties, from a experiential standpoint, that are 10 minutes away from the beach, but the house, like when the house on the beach has one feature, mediocre design with the beach.
A good
That's
view.
It.
And beach, yeah. Right?
But then when you get 15 or 10 minutes away from the beach, you still get mediocre design and no beach.
5 minutes away.
But when we come in, right, we're doing this experiential design where it's like, am I willing to drive to the beach to get all this experience when I'm not at the beach? And what we have found is that the properties that are on the beach, they just inherently have that beach success, but you pay that beach price. The properties that are off the trail that have high experience, we have found historically, those clients' barrier to entry is way lower. Their acquisition cost is way lower. Yeah. And their profit gap is way higher between what they spent and what they're making, because not everyone can afford to stay on the beach, but they want to go to the beach, but they can afford this other house. And when you're the experience amongst everyone else that's not on the beach, you're the first choice. Yeah. Always. Yeah. You're the first choice. You're everyone's first choice. And that's what is getting you to the top of these tiers of market. And as you pointed out, if you're not a part of Vodacy and hearing this, you're going, what do you mean this mid-scale, upscale luxury? We are simply talking about the guest expectation relative to the revenue that AirDNA is projecting that these properties are making, and the guest ANR, the price they're willing to pay relative to the amenities and the experience that they're on average getting in that tier of class. And what we've done is broken those ANRs, those average nightly rates, into class tiers of mid-scale, upscale luxury. And we've broken up those revenue productions or projections into mid-scale, upscale, and luxury, and overlaid those to develop a algorithm that says, if you spend this much for a property that is going to be in this average range of nightly rate, generating this average range of revenue, this is the amount of money you should spend to achieve the results you want to achieve, which is phenomenal, because what a lot of people do is come in with luxury dollars on a mid-scale budget, and they're so upside down because they model homed their house with super high end. They went all restoration hardware and like, oh, everyone's going to love this. But the reality is you can fill a house with restoration hardware and it still looks empty and boring and lame. Yep. Right. But now you've spent 80 or 100 grand on furniture when you could have spent 20 or 30 doing the right amount for the right class based on the, what you're charging and what you need to make it pencil. And that's what Vodacy has figured out over the years. And that's what we're referring to here. And what that question is, hey, I understand the algorithm. I understand the numbers, but can I compete with upscale if I'm a mid-scale property, but spend upscale dollars doing it? My advice would be, I wouldn't spend upscale dollars furnishing it. I wouldn't spend upscale dollars doing that. If you're not going to be indie upscale amenity, but there are times that we can come in with a few key strategic adds in the amenity package to a mid-scale property that now make it compete, but not by just going out and spending more money, but by strategically placing those dollars into amenities that create outcomes.
Yeah. And I'll just put a pin in it with this too, is because we could unpack this a lot. It's a really good question, but it's also a good question because there's so many layers to the answer. And it is, there are times where your market itself only has mid-scale properties, the top properties in there that are marked as luxury, making the top dollars. We look at it and we're like, holy crap, if we came in with a mid-scale property, we would be the top property in that area. Yep. There's also other markets that have their top of the market. There's some players in there and you better come in locked and loaded or you're not going to compete. Right. And so there's so many different things that we're looking at. And so the answer isn't always, yes, I can spend mid-scale dollars and I can compete at this level. Some of the best, you know, and again, this is all, there's so many layers to this. There is a method to this madness, but some of our best investments are buy-in, like Mike mentions, B and C properties, and creating this crazy experience because our acquisition cost was so low and what we're putting into them. And then all of a sudden the revenue we're generating on the back end, some of our best returns on investment are those B or C properties that we deck out. And, and they can be, but it's so market dependent. We look at that and you really should be looking at that. Right? Some markets you have to be within a certain proximity to certain profit drivers. There's other markets that you walk in and you're like, man, if I just do the, like what we would consider the basics, like a three, you know, a mid-scale three-star design, it's going to stand out so much that instantly you walk into the top property. And other markets, they're way more competitive than that. So it really depends on what you're walking into as well. And so,
Can I put one design pin of advice in there for someone watching this that's looking for a designer or looking at doing this? Okay. What I would tell you is very simply this. If you're meeting with someone that is focused on making your property pretty, they are already the wrong designer. You should be meeting with someone, if they're not analyzing the revenue of your area, if they're not analyzing the amenity packages and the experiences that your competition is providing, if they're not analyzing the dollars in relative to the dollars you need to get out, and putting together a package that is financially solvent to generate outcomes, then you're not working with the right person.
Yeah.
And it's one of the most frustrating things that I see in design in this industry is that 9 out of 10 designers are designing to a look, not designing to an experience and or a financial outcome.
Yeah.
So as you're interviewing designers, just make sure that if you ask them metric questions, data questions, what do you find are the number one amenities that you could add to this property that will take me up to the top of the market relative to my competition?
And you have to ask them why. Like Mike's point, 100%, you're a designer. It's easy to say, oh, you need a sauna, you need a hot tub, you need a pool, you need a pickleball court, whatever it is, whatever they recommend, say why and show me the numbers behind it. There are plenty of markets we get a phenomenal return on pickleball courts. There's other markets we don't get a good return on it. And that goes with every single big amenity. And you have to pull the numbers from your market specifically and say, hey, listen, I'm going to get a really good return on a sauna here. That doesn't mean I'm going to get a really good return on a sauna over here. And so very much, the design needs to be not just to make it pretty, it needs to be pretty. At the end of the day, that's a given, right? Design has to be congruent, pretty, and attractive and everything else. But it has to be, it's a business, right? There's got to be a, you know, it's part of your return on your investment and what you're spending and what you're doing. And really the core of that question that came in was, you know, how much do I really need to spend to operate where I want to operate? Well, you know, your head's right in the right spot. The fact that you asked this, you know, I actually don't have a name on this. So I don't know who it is, but the fact that this question came in is you're part of the Vodacy family because nobody else sees this breakdown outside. So
something else
you also have the resources on the underwriting, right?
Yeah, we talk about the why. Why are you buying the property? That's first and foremost, right? Like if you're buying the property for cash flow above all else, right? These are the equations we want to look at. If you're saying, hey, this is purely a lifestyle asset, right? And we want to have comfort for whatever we're looking to do, or this is a tax play, or this is an appreciation play. The why to what you're trying to do in that market matters so much. And it was like, I want everything. I'm like, well, so do we all. But like we, yeah. You know, to your guys' point, yeah, we bought our property in more of a mid-scale product. Mike designed it, right? And we did, and we dominate more than double what the average of that resort is, because we are the best by light years from everyone else in that resort, right? And we were saying, hey, we know what we can do this resort, but we bought this resort for cash flow. That was the number one reason we bought it. So what can we do to maximize this specific property for our specific goals with this specific budget? And that's what we did.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay, guys, let's wrap it up. Good episode. Great. First live episode we've ever done. And so that was fun. No glitches. Did we stay live, Jake? I guess everybody, we stayed live. Those of you that are longtime listeners used to listen to the recording, you will always have the recordings. These will always be posted right after. But also, if you want to join us live, because you can start messaging Jake during the show and get some questions answered in real time, or you just want to join us live. And we're going to be 11 a.m. Eastern time on Wednesdays, 9 a.m. Mountain time. And so we will we'll start going doing Whiskey Wednesday live and keep wrapping it up. I will actually, you guys don't know this. I'm springing this on you. You guys are doing Whiskey Wednesday without me next week, because I'm going to be in Hawaii for the week, and I don't know, maybe I'll join you. Maybe I'll grab my Mai Tai. But I'm 4 hours behind, so that's going to be at 5 a.m. So
that's an early morning.
I don't know if I'm going to grab the Mai Tai quite that early, but we'll see if I join, but we'll still be on schedule next week. I may or may not be with you, but Josh, Jake, Mike will always be able to answer those questions. Send them in to support@vodacy.com. If you're not joining us live, and let's get those done. And then also, if you have 5 minutes, we would love to hear your feedback on the survey. And so go to the show notes and or the bio, wherever, whatever platform. There's so many different places we place this. You're going to be in the bio description or show notes. And so take that survey. Let us know what you want us to talk about, what you don't want us to talk about, what you like hearing, what you don't like hearing, and give us some feedback so we can continue to raise the bar and make this show better for you. So final thing at the end of every episode, you guys hear me as a broken record. Usually people think I record, this is all recorded. It's actually not. I just say the same thing every time, but it's a favor. First favor. If you like the show, share it. Let other people know about the show. Those things are really, really helpful. Review it on whatever platform you're watching or listening on. The algorithm will share the show. Those things are very helpful for us because we don't run sponsorships to run the show. This is all organic, and want you to, we're hoping that people that want to be part of these conversations walking in the short-term rental game with their eyes wide open, hear about it. So share it if you don't mind. And the final, most important thing I ask at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today. Start building that life you don't want to take vacation from. Cheers, my friends. Cheers, boys.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website?
Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit vodacy.com.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.